Okay, Mishnah Zayin. People tend to get a little bit intimidated by Mishnah Zayin, just because it's concepts that we're not so familiar with, the world of Tumah. But with a little bit of background, it's really not that challenging. So I tend to get a little bit more background than less, because I think ultimately it's overall more helpful. But again, it's not essential to know these things, but it's very helpful to know these things. So just a little bit of background for the world of Tumah. Anytime that we're talking about Tumah in Shas, there are really five questions that you have to be on the lookout for. There are five issues that you have to be on the lookout for. The first one is, what's the origin of the Tumah? What's the source of the Tumah? Are we talking about a dead body that is the source of the Tumah? Are we talking about a carcass, a nevela, that's the source of the Tumah? Are we talking about a special person that the Torah says this person is Tamei because of something that he is discharging? For example, a zav is a person who discharges fluids as a result of a specific kind of disease, so he is tamei. The fluid that he discharges is tamei. The spit that comes out of his body is tamei. Same thing for Anita, a woman who discharges blood at specific times of the month is also tamei. But they have special status. The same thing in Mitzorah. A Mitzorah is a person who's also Tamei, a person who develops a specific kind of spots, discoloration on his skin or other parts of his body, is also Tamei. So the first question we always have to ask is, what is the source, what's the origin of the Tumah? Secondly, whenever you want to measure this strength of the Tumah, so the source is going to be important, the origin of the Tumah is going to be important. The second thing that's going to be important is the target. What is on the table that it's, what is on the verge of becoming Tumah? What is coming into contact with that source, with that origin of Tumah that's in question? Are we talking about, is there a person who touched a dead body? Is it or touched a zav? Or is it food? Or is it kalim? Is it utensils? If it's kalim, let's say, is it made out of metal? Is it made out of wood? Is it made out of earthenware? If it's food, is it kachim? Is it truma? Is it chulin? Is it regular run-of-the-mill food? We always have to keep in mind, what is the target of the Tumah? Because that's a measure for the level of stringency of the source of the Tumah. It's harder to be metame food or kalim than it is to be metame food. It's harder to be metame chulin than it is to be metame chuma or kachim. So the second thing is the target of the Tumah. The third thing that we have to keep track of is the method, the means of transmission, the mechanism of transmission. How is the Tumah being transmitted from the source of the Tumah to the target? Is it coming into direct contact? Is it touching? Is it maga? Right? Is it lifting something up? Is it masa? Where the zav, let's say, is sitting down on something that's meant to be sat on, or he's lying down on something that's meant to be lied upon? But that's called mishkav and moshav. So we have to keep track of what is the means of transmission. The simplest way to transmit tumah is through maga, but the more complicated ways suggest, right, that we're dealing with a more stringent level of Tumah. We'll discuss for Mitzorah. Mitzorah also is a very unique form of transmitting Tumah. Another thing, so again, we're talking about this, we have to keep track of the source of the Tumah, the origin. We have to talk about the target of the Tumah. We have to talk about the means of transmission. Then we have to talk about the duration of the Tumah. How long does it last for? Does it just fall off after a day? Does it fall off after a week? How long lasting is that Tumah? And part of that is the fifth thing. You could keep them as one category, as two categories. The fifth thing is the protocol, the process for that ultimately leads to the removal of that Tumah. What kind of process is necessary? Do you just have to go to the mikvah? Do you need to wait it out for a certain period of time? Do you have to get hazah? Do you have to be sprinkled with the dam of the paraduma? Do you have to bring a karban? The protocol that's needed to remove that Tumah, that's the fifth thing that we have to keep track of. So again, the origin of the Tumah, the target of the Tumah, the means of transmitting that Tumah, the duration of the Tumah, how long it lasts for, and the protocol, the process that's necessary to remove that Tumah. Okay, so now let's talk about Zav and Metzora in particular. That's what we're talking about in this Mishnah. The Zav is a person, is a man, right? A Zava would be the woman. A Zav is a man who discharges a fluid that's as a result of a specific disease, and when he discharges that fluid, he becomes Tameh. Now, what's his level of Tumah? What status of Tumah does he have? Is he an Avatumah or is he a Rishon Tumah? An Avatumah is the classic natural source of Tumah. The ultimate original source of the Tumah, like a dead body, let's say. And an Avat Tumah is characterized by the fact that things that have a status of an Avat Tumah can be metame even people or even kelim. So remember, again, one of the ways of measuring the level of stringency of anything that's tame is its target, the things that it can be metame. So if it can be metame people or kelim, that's the most stringent form of Tumah. If something is a Rishon LaTumah, that means it's first Turgi. It's not quite the Av, but it's the Rishon, also called a Vlad HaTumah sometimes, is not able to metame people or kelim. A Vlad HaTumah, a Rishon HaTumah, is only able to be metame food. So when I talk about a Zav himself, once he discharges once, he doesn't become an Av HaTumah, he becomes a Rishon HaTumah. So in other words, he can't be metame people or kelim. He can only be metame food. However, if he discharges a second time, now he becomes an avatoma, becomes tame such that he can be metame people and he can be metame kalim. Now, in addition, another major difference is not just the target but also the protocol needed to remove that tumah. When a zav has one discharge that comes out of his body, he goes to the mikvah and he's done. But if he has a discharge again, now two times comes out of him, he is tame. He's an avat tumah. He is metame people. He's metame kelim, and the protocol is more challenging to remove that tumah. He has to wait a period of 7 days, what's called Zayin Nekim. He has to have 7 clean days where nothing comes out of him for 7 days. If he has 7 clean days where nothing comes out of him, now he can go to the mikvah and he can become tahar. However, what about if a Zav didn't just have 2 discharges, he had 3 discharges? Well, you can't get more stringent than Av HaTumah, right? He already has a status as an Av HaTumah, so is there any difference? So yeah, there is a difference. The difference is that after having 3 discharges of this fluid, he becomes Tameh, he is an Av HaTumah, he can be Metameh people, he can be Metameh kelim. And by the way, just like we talked about before, a Zav, when he has a status of an Av HaTumah, he's able to be Metameh things. If he puts weight on things that are meant to hold his weight, they become dummy. So if he lies down in his bed, the bed becomes tummy. If he sits down in a chair, the chair becomes tummy. Now you might ask me, well, what's the difference between sitting in a chair and touching the chair? So the answer is, well, what effect does that leave on the target? How long lasting is that tumah, right? When a zav touches a kli, the kli typically is only a rishon tumah. The way to think about it, right, if a zav sits down to eat breakfast, he picks up a metal spoon or touches the metal spoon, the spoon becomes a rishon tumah. It doesn't become an avatumah. But when a zav is sitting in that chair at the breakfast table, he's touching the chair, that's true. But the chair itself becomes not a rishon tumah, but an avatumah. So what's the difference between the spoon he's using for cereal and the chair that he's sitting on at the table? The spoon can be metame the food, the bowl of cereal that he's eating. But the chair can be metame a person or keli. Okay, so now the Zav, if he has 3 discharges, what happens? What's the protocol to get rid of the tumah? Well, first of all, we know he's got to have Zayin Nekim, so it's going to take 7 clean days to remove that tumah. After the 7 clean days are over, now what does he need? Well, if he had 3 discharges, he's going to have to bring a karban. So he's going to have to go to the mikvah, he's going to have to bring a karban. After those things happen, now he's tar by nighttime. That's the difference between a Zav who has 2 discharges versus a Zav who had 3 discharges. And that's the major distinction that the Mishnah highlights here. The Mishnah says, Mishnah Zayin, Ein bein Zav harosh de reios. There's no difference between a Zav who had seen 2 sightings. Meaning, what does it mean he had 2 sightings? It means that he had 2 discharges that he observed. Leroosh shalosh, to a Zav who had seen 3 discharges, again, he observed 3 discharges out of his body, ela carbon. The only difference between them is the carbon. In other words, they both have a status of an avatumah. They can both be metami, the same kinds of things. The way that they transmit tumah is the same. How long lasting the tumah is on that item is also the same. But the protocol to get their tumah off is slightly different. They both need Zayin Nekim, and they both need to go to the mikvah, but the zav who had 3 discharges is going to have to bring a carbon in order to be fully tahor. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Now, the second part of the Mishnah is the part about Metzora. Again, we're going to have to keep track of the, number one, the source of the tumah, the target for the tumah, the thing that you're being metame, right? The way that you transmit the tumah, the duration of the tumah, how long it lasts for, and the protocol for the removal of that tumah. Now, the way that it works for Mitzora is usually when we talk about the person. Again, Tzaraas is, we translate as leprosy. It's not a very good translation. It's not specifically disease, right? Again, it can be spots, discoloration, that happens to a person on his skin, his hair. It could happen to his clothing. It could happen to his belongings. It could happen to his house. And all those things can become tame. So when we're talking about a Mitzora, now the rule is for a Mitzora, what happens when a Mitzora, a fellow wakes up in the morning and he discovers that there's discoloration on his skin? He doesn't automatically become tame, right? He has to go to the Mitzora doctor. The Mitzora doctor is the Kohen. So he goes to the Kohen. The Kohen is going to be the one who's going to decide if this fellow is Tahar or if he's tame. Now what happens? The Kohen takes a look at the discoloration on his skin, let's say. The simplest way for a Kohen, for our purposes, for Mitzora, to be a Mitzora, full-fledged Mitzora, to be Tame, is if he has a discoloration the size of a gris, of white, of a certain color of white, and it's not just the skin that's Tame, it's also two hairs that were black before, now they are white. If the Kohen would see that, when this fellow shows up to his door, he declares him Tame, now he is what's called a Mitzora Mukhlat, he is a definitive declared Mitzora, and he has to be kicked out of the walled cities of Eretz Yisrael. We kick him out, we put him in quarantine, he is Tame. Now, one of the major effects of a Mitzora is that when he's in a state of Tumah, so he's been Tame in all the standard ways, he's been Tame, he's also an Avatumah, by the way, right? One of the easiest ways, by the way, to keep look at it is in one of the telltale signs, one of the ways that the Torah tells you that something is metame as an avatama is if we tell you that his clothing required tahara in the mikvah. Why would his clothing require tahara in the mikvah? Because his clothing are a form of kalim, which means that he can be metame kalim. If he can be metame kalim, that means that he is an avatama. Mitzora is an avatama. But one of the major uniquenesses between a Mitzora's tumah and anybody else's tumah is the tumah of tumas bia, that if he walks into a room, everything in the room, everyone and everything in that room becomes tame. They become a status. They have a status of a rishon l'tumah. So we kick the mitzora out of the machane. He has to sit in quarantine until it gets better. Now that's the mitzora mukhlat. What would happen though if the mitzora, if this fellow wakes up in the morning, he has discoloration in his skin, so he goes to the kohen. The kohen takes a look at him, and it's not a full-fledged tumah. He sees that there's discoloration, but let's say there are not two hairs that are white. There are black hairs in the middle. So now he's not a mitzora mukhlat. He's not definitively a mitzora to be locked up. He is a mitzora muskar. It means that we put him on hold. He's on provisional status. He's going to have to be muskar, locked up, put in quarantine, not as a full-fledged status of Mitzora Mukhlet, but that we have to wait and see what happens with him. We have to see if he develops into a full-fledged Mitzora. So what would happen? A week later, he comes to the Kohen. The Kohen checks him out again. If now he checks him out, and let's say the discoloration has subsided, it's paled, etc. So he's tar entirely. What about though if it spreads, if it gets worse, if it the hairs become white? So now he's a mitzora mukhlat, and now he's going to have to, he's a full fledged bona fide mitzora, and he's going to have to undergo the full process for becoming tar. One of the things, there's a few things that the Torah tells us that we expect of the mitzora in his process while he is a mitzora. He has to tear his clothing. He has to let his hair grow out. He's supposed to cover up his mouth. There are a bunch of things. He has to tell everyone, he has to warn everybody off that he's tame, right? So then what happens afterwards, though? So now he gets checked up by the Kohen again. The Kohen sees that this fellow, a while later, the discoloration has paled. He is set to go through the process of becoming tahar. What is the process? The basic process is two parts. Number one, the Kohen is going to have to shave off all of his body here. He is going to have to take two birds. He is going to have to gather together hyssop grass, cedar, red azov, shnitolas, also red dyed wool, string, and he's going to bunch those things together, and he's going to dip the one, he's going to shecht one of the birds over a bowl, a receptacle filled with mayim chaim, with natural water, kind of like what we use for the paraduma. He's going to have to shecht the bird, squeeze some of the blood of that bird into the cup of water, then he buries the bird. Then with that cup of water, now he takes the other bird, bundles it up together with the hyssop grass, with the cedar tree, with the shnitalas, the red string of wool. He dips that all, he bunches that together, dips it in the blood, in the bloody water now, and now he sprinkles that onto the mitzvah's hand, and he sends the bird away. That is the first part. So he's going to shave off all of the mitzvah's hair, and he does this process with the bird. Once he does that, that removes the major tumas that affect a mitzvah. In other words, now he can actually come into the city. He won't be metame people al derech tumas bia by just walking into the room. But he's not fully tahar yet. In order to become fully tahar, that is not metame, let's say, al derech maga, by touching things, etc. So another 7 days are going to have to pass by, and the kohen is going to shave off all of his hair again. There are specific karbanos that he has to bring. And then once all those things are done, now he becomes tahar. So the question is like this. Is there any difference between a mitzora muskar and a mitzora mukhlat? The mitzora who is, right, he wakes up. A mitzora muskar, again, is the person who is put in quarantine on a provisional basis, right? That we're going to wait to see what happens with this fellow. We're going to wait to see if he becomes fully tamei or not, versus mukhlat, where he's already defined, definitively considered to be a tamei mitzora. So what's the difference? So that's the second part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, in being mitzora muskar, the mitzora mukhlat, there's no difference between the mitzora muskar and the mitzora mukhlat. What's the difference? Ella priya uprima. The only difference between them is priya and prima. What's priya and what's prima? Priya is when you let your hair grow out, and prima is tearing clothing, renting your garments. A mitzora mukhlat is a person, he has to let his hair grow out, he has to tear his clothing. A mitzora who is muskar does not need to let his hair grow out, he does not have to tear his clothing. Mishnah goes on to say, ein bein tahar mitoch hesker, letahar mitoch hechlet. There's no difference between the person who becomes tahar out of this period of hesker, right? So if that's the kohen, that's the mitzora who was on trial, to see, we put him in quarantine just to see if he develops into full-fledged mitzora, versus a tahar mitoch hechlet, a kohen, who becomes tahar out of a state of hechlet, where he was a full-fledged, bona fide, definitive, locked up mitzora. What's the big difference between them? Ella teglachas v'tziparim. The big difference between them is teglachas, which is shaving off all of his body here, and tziparim, the birds. Right. The major difference is that when you have a mitzora who's mukhlat, so once the kohen says, okay, you're good to go, now we can go through the protocol of you becoming tahar. So now we have to shave off all of his body here, and we have to do the whole two birds thing. Now Shain Kim, when it comes to Mitzora, who is the only muskar, he doesn't have to do that. He just has to go to the mikvah. So just to speak up very briefly, what we had over here is that the Mishnah discusses the difference between the Zav who discharges two discharges versus a Zav who discharges three discharges. The major distinction is carbon. The Zav who discharges three times is going to be full-fledged avatoma, and he's also going to have to wait Zayin Nakim, and he's also going to have to bring a carbon. What's the difference between Mitzvah Muskar and Mitzvah Mukhlat? Well, number one, as far as their tumah is concerned, Mitzvah Mukhlat has to let his hair grow, he has to tear his clothing, and then the second major difference is when they're becoming tar. When a mitzvah becomes tar, when he was in the state of hesker, versus a mitzvah who was coming out of a state of hechlet, is that mitzvah coming out of a state of hechlet needs to glachas and tziparim. He has to have all of his body here shaved off, and he has to have the process of the birds. Okay.